Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and today we're going to be talking with Brad King. We're going to be talking about his book, Dirty Diets, and how the environment is affecting our waistlines. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with hormone health, with Dr. Marita Show. But before we do that, here's the health news.
A new study shows the more babies breastfeed, the less likely it is they will develop any kind of misalignment in their teeth later on. But pacifiers can negate some of that potential benefit, even if the children are breastfeeding. The Australian researchers tracked just over 1,300 children for 5 years, including how much they breastfed at 3 months, 1 year, and 2 years old. The study authors also asked how often the children used a pacifier, if at all, when the kids were 3 months, 1, 2, and 4 years old. The risk for overbite was one-third lower for those who exclusively breastfed for 3 to 6 months compared to those who didn't, the findings showed. If they breastfed at least 6 months or more, the risk of overbite dropped by 44%. The findings were published online June 15th in the journal Pediatrics. Children's thinking skills may develop faster if they encounter green space, such as parks and woods, in their day-to-day lives, a new study suggests. It's possible something other than green space is affecting the kids' intellectual prowess, and the apparent link may be purely coincidental, but one expert not involved with the study says other benefits of fresh air and playgrounds are already known. In the new study, researchers tracked nearly 2,600 Barcelona school children aged 7 to 10 for a year to see how their memory and attention, so-called cognitive skills, developed. The children were tested every 3 months. The researchers looked for possible connections between development of thinking skills and green space, defined as any space with vegetation around their home, their school, and on their commute to school. The study was published in the June 15th issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. New research suggests consumption of chamomile may be linked to a longer lifespan for older Mexican-American women. The study found among Mexican-American women who consumed chamomile, the risk of death during the study period was reduced by about 28%. However, the study only showed evidence of a possible link between chamomile and longer lifespan. It didn't prove a cause and effect relationship. Researchers examined the findings from almost 1,700 Mexican-American people from the southwest U.S. They were all 65 and older and were tracked from 2000 to 2007. According to the study, about 14% of the participants reported using chamomile. Using chamomile didn't seem to affect lifespan in men, the study found. The study was published recently in the journal The Gerontologist. And finally, a new Brazilian study finds workouts that really get the heart pumping may help ease asthma in people with the respiratory condition. Researchers looked at outcomes for 43 people aged 20 to 59 with moderate to severe asthma. They were randomly selected to do 30-minute yoga breathing exercises twice a week, or the breathing exercises plus a 35-minute indoor treadmill session twice a week. After 3 months, those in the treadmill group showed greater reductions in asthma severity and more improvement in their quality of life, according to the study, published June 10th in the journal Thorax.
Thanks for that, Reg. Well, our first guest, Brad King, is a nutritional researcher, the author of 11 books, and a frequent contributor to the Health First Show. Brad, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Dave.
So, tell us what you're working on right now in terms of research and, you know, what you're investigating.
Well, you know, I'm always very interested in the aging aspects of the human body and premature aging, more particular, just because there are so many people throughout North America who experience really accelerated aging cycles. And so I'm always looking at ways to where the research is showing that you can actually slow down certain parts of that aging aspect. And in that, I also look for any type of signal to be able to affect metabolism in a positive way. And the two seem to be intricately attached. So whenever you can affect metabolism in a positive way, you can, in effect, help to slow down some of the ravages of premature aging. In doing so, you can also help people live a much leaner life, a life of abundant energy, vitality, so people can look, feel, and perform their best. And those are always areas that I'm, you know, constantly looking into.
Brad, you know, I've read studies where they've talked about, you know, when you get to a certain age, it's good to have some extra weight on. You know, because it just, and I think we're talking about 75 or 80, you know, 8 years old, you need that extra weight.
Yeah.
Because you know, you're not eating or something. But tell us a little bit about what is ideal weight and what should that look like for most people?
Well, you know, first of all, it really depends on the individual. There is no real such thing as ideal weight for, you know, in a mass society, so to speak. I mean, yes, the government will come out with certain standards like the body mass index, which takes into account your height and your weight and does a series of calculations. And if you can fall into that neat little figure of 19.5 all the way up to 24.9, then supposedly you are healthy. But on a body mass index, somebody who has really understood the importance of lean body mass, like I have, where I've retained lean body mass and even grown new lean body mass going through the aging cycle, I show up as clinically obese on a body mass index because for my height, I just weigh too much. So for the average population, the body mass index may be a good indicator of you know, whether you're obese or whether you're somewhat healthy weight-wise. But I think where a lot of this research is going is we lose a great deal of lean body mass. So it's not so much how much do we weigh when we get older. It's really what does the majority of that weight consist of? And it doesn't matter how old we are. We never want too much body fat because that's always going to be counterproductive to our overall health cycle. But we can never have too much lean body mass, natural lean body mass. And that's really where the problem is because people are losing a significant amount of their muscle tissue going through the aging process. That's a condition called sarcopenia. And it is not uncommon for some people to lose up to one half of their lean body mass by the time, you know, of retirement age. So you need to do everything within your power to ward that off, and you do that through proper exercise, weight-bearing activity, or progressive resistance exercise being the most important thing, and then also very high grades of amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein. So the higher the grade the protein that you can take in, the less loss of lean body mass you're going to experience. And according to the research, you should be able to live longer and live healthier in the process.
When you say live longer and live healthier, what is the research showing? What is it? You know,
well,
what are we saying?
The research is showing that loss of lean body mass and loss of muscular strength are the two top determining factors of longevity. So what that means is if you lose too much muscle and you lose too much strength, which you will if you lose too much muscle, the two go hand in hand, then you're going to accelerate the aging cycle. So you need to reverse that, and you reverse that by doing everything within your power to holding on to that lean body mass, because in that lean body mass, primarily muscle tissue, which, as I mentioned, shrinks as you go through the aging process, the reason we get larger as a society when we lose lean body mass is because we don't have the same metabolic advantage. We actually lose the body's ability to be able to process energy effectively over a 24-hour period. And I'll give you a little bit of an example of what that looks like. I'm just between the ages of 20 and 40, and 40 is not very old linearly or chronologically speaking, but just between those 20 years, we lose the ability to metabolize about 300 calories. Now, 300 calories may not seem like a lot to the average person, but that adds up pretty quickly, because 300 calories per day equates to about 2,100 calories in a week, or 110,000 extra calories in a year, and that would equate to the potential to be able to store an extra 30 pounds of fat every single year if you didn't do anything in the process. So by just losing a small amount of lean body mass, we lose the body's ability to really burn calories and create energy and feel fantastic in the process. So that in itself creates a reduction in quality of life.
So the body compensates in some way, I'm assuming, Brad, you know, because I remember when I was 20, I could eat a lot of food. But as I, you know, as I go through this aging process and, well, I have to note that there's times when, you know, if I'm doing a lot of exercise, I know that I can consume more calories, or I need to consume more calories. But if I slow down on that, and, you know, I think what I hear you saying is that, you know, as we slow down in our activities and we continue to consume the same amount, that we're going to pack on that weight.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's a catch-22. We have to understand that when people over-exercise, and there are a lot of people that really don't understand what proper exercise is for their, you know, particular biochemistry or physiology. And what ends up happening is people think that they can just lose extra body weight, mostly coming from fat, by doing exercise. And that's just not the case, because what ends up happening is many times over, and this is an evolutionary aspect that is built into our genes, we'll actually crave more food, because going back a few thousand years ago, by expending calories, today we go on a treadmill and we expend calories, you know, back then we had to actually hunt and fish and gather and do all the things that, you know, we didn't have the convenience we have in this day and age, and that meant we were expending too many calories, which meant the body would say, hey, let's increase the appetite so that we can bring more fuel in, because we don't know when another famine is going to be around the corner. So today, when we do too much exercise, we overstimulate the appetite and the craving centers of the brain, which causes us to eat too much food. And this is why very often you see people that just rely on exercise, but they don't lose any body fat. As a matter of fact, you see people even gaining some extra body fat just by relying on exercise to lose the fat. We need to control the dietary aspects, because without controlling the diet, we're not able to burn enough body fat for it to really make that much of an impact.
So let's talk about controlling the diet, since you're right there.
Sure.
What do we need to do?
Well, we need to learn that we can't give in to our cravings as much as we have been. And by saying that, you know, that's a bit of a catch-22 in its own right, because many times we'll crave the wrong foods because we've been eating the wrong food. So I'll give you an example. Many of us will have, like, just an absolute horrible lunch. And the reason we'll have a horrible lunch, and that could be, you know, maybe we'll go out for a sandwich, we'll have some potato chips, that's our vegetable, maybe we'll have a Diet Coke, we usually have a dessert, we come home from a hard day of work and we have, you know, an enormous appetite, so we eat even worse foods going into the evening when our metabolism should be low. And by doing that, we have to understand that we create a very vicious cycle, because whenever you eat very sugary, very sweet foods, we call those high glycemic foods, foods that really release sugar too quickly for the body to be able to handle it effectively. And what the body does is it goes into a fat storage mode. That's a protective mechanism for the body. So whenever you eat these very high glycemic, the quick-releasing carbohydrates, what ends up happening is you stimulate too much of the hormone insulin. Insulin puts the body into a fat storage mode, but it causes the brain to crave an enormous amount of sugar, whether it's, you know, from bread or pasta or a potato chips or some kind of other junk food, so that the body can have a continuous supply of this inefficient fuel source. Sugar is an inefficient fuel source because it doesn't sustain you over a long enough period of time. That's why the body constantly craves it. However, if you stop eating the sugars and the foods that are creating the problem, those high glycemic foods, it may take a few days for the body to be able to adjust metabolically speaking, but after those few days of what I call with withdrawal syndrome, then all of a sudden you stop craving the foods that are creating the problem in the first place, and now you allow the body to get at more of its fat for energy.
We're talking with Brad King. He's the author of Dirty Diets, Exposing the Dietary Lies That Keep You From Feeling Your Best and Looking Your Best. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about what you can do to feel your optimum.